A shooting this afternoon in Missoula sends two people to the hospital. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about a hefty fine against a dark money group that may be tricky to collect. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with farmer Courtney Cowgill about the special turkeys she and her husband raise on their farm north of Great Falls. A shooting on South Reserve Street in Missoula this afternoon has sent both a suspect and an undercover narcotics officer to the hospital. Missoula County Sheriff's spokeswoman Paige Pavilone says the shooting occurred in a parking lot near Gold's Gym during an operation being conducted by the Interagency High Intensity Drug Task Force.
A shot was fired against a HIDA detective, and he sustained non-life-threatening injuries. He was transported to the hospital. As a result of that shot, another deputy who was on scene, who is also a plainclothes detective for HIDA, he returned fire and struck the suspect. The suspect was then detained and transported to the hospital as well.
Pavilone says one of the men was shot in the arm, the other in the leg, and neither injury is life-threatening. Authorities continue to search for a second person of interest who fled the scene, heading east behind Rosehours and Shopko.
He was described as being in his late 20s. It's a male, either Hispanic or Native American, 6 foot tall, 220 pounds. He was wearing a black baseball hat, black coat or sweatshirt, may possibly have facial hair, may also have black sweatpants on.
Pavilone says the investigation into the shooting incident continues.
And in other news from around the state, a Montana judge is fining one of the state's most well-known dark money groups for illegal campaign activity. District Judge Jeffrey Sherlock handed down the $260,000 penalty to American Tradition Partnership this week. The nonprofit has made headlines in recent years for sending out anonymous political mailers and for successfully challenging some of Montana's election laws. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says this week's fines come as American Tradition Partnership appears to be quietly dissolving.
American Tradition Partnership, ATP for short, still has a functioning website. Although the last post is from January of this year. And if you call the number at the bottom of the page...
We're sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
The fine is against the corporation.
That's Montana Commissioner of Political Practices, Jonathan Modell. The ironic thing about this $260,000 fine is it comes from a lawsuit ATP originally filed. Over the last couple years, the nonprofit has had some high-profile success in challenging Montana's election laws, including a lawsuit which gutted the state's century-old ban on corporate campaign spending. ATP was trying to do more of the same in this case that Judge Sherlock ruled on this week. But this time, it totally backfired for ATP. Over the course of the suit, the Political Practices Commissioner filed a number of counterclaims against ATP, and what Judge Sherlock did was throw out ATP's original claims and agree with some of the counterclaims brought by the commissioner. That's where this $260,000 fine comes from, saying ATP sent anonymous attack mailers against at least 10 candidates in 2008 without ever reporting any of those expenditures. That's illegal. And Judge Sherlock goes so far as to call it a deliberate attempt to evade Montana's campaign requirements. But as for assessing that fine...
The fine is against the corporation.
We come back to this.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
ATP's former executive director, Donnie Ferguson, left earlier this year. No one has been appointed to replace him. The group's former attorney, James Brown, said back in January ATP was no longer active. He suggests it could be hard to collect the fines. Political Practices Commissioner Jonathan Modell says he will be looking at his options.
What our office and the other parties will have to decide is whether or not we're going to also ask that the fine be applied against the officers and directors of the corporation, and we may.
He says the individuals on ATP's 2008 board of directors are known. For now, Commissioner Modell is focusing on complaints from the 2010 election. He has already ruled in that election, ATP moved from just sending attack mailers to fully coordinating with candidates the group supported. Also illegal. Modal says any fines from these cases may be applied not only to ATP, but to those candidates. He says therein lies a message to 2014 candidates.
They need to be careful when they're dealing with nonprofit corporations that come to them and say, we want to help you.
But whether American Tradition Partnership will be one of those corporations spending in the next election, that's still not clear.
We're sorry.
I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
U.S. Senator John Tester says he was in Israel meeting with the prime minister as a nuclear deal with Iran was announced. Tester says that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was not happy about details of the plan revealed by the Obama administration on Sunday. Tester told Lee Newspapers of Montana that Netanyahu suspects that under the deal, Iran could still continue to enrich uranium. Tester has scheduled his week-long visit to Israel some time ago. It was arranged and sponsored by the American Israel Education Foundation, a pro-Israel group. Tester said it was a coincidence that he was meeting with the country's leaders during the big development on Middle East policy. The six-month interim agreement with Iran calls for it to limit activity that could create a nuclear weapon in exchange for easing of economic sanctions.
The State Board of Regents is looking at making some changes to the insurance plan it offers university students because premiums aren't covering the full cost of claims. The Missoulian reports the plan provided by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana saw a loss ratio of 112% last year. Students attending Montana's public universities must have health insurance, but under the Affordable Care Act, students under age 26 were allowed to remain on their parents' plans. Connie Welsh is director of benefits for the Montana University System. She says there appears to be three options: making the university students' insurance plan more solvent and attractive to buyers, eliminating the plan completely and directing students to the open exchange, or creating a self-funded plan that would save money by not having to pay a premium tax.
Prosecutors have filed a reduced charge in the November 9th shooting death of an Anaconda man. Deer Lodge County prosecutors initially charged 21-year-old Dylan Jess with deliberate homicide in the death of 45-year-old Robert Furman of Anaconda. The Montana Standard reports Jess pleaded not guilty to a reduced charge of negligent homicide today during a district court hearing in Anaconda. His bond was lowered from $250,000 to $100,000. Charging documents say Jess and Furman grappled over a shotgun at Furman's house early on November 9th. Police say Furman ended up with the gun and apparently thought he had emptied it. Police say Furman put the gun under his chin and Jess pulled the trigger.
A fire at the Smoot Honey Warehouse in Power caused up to $500,000 in damages and may have set back the company's ability to package its honey gift sets in time for the holidays. Company controller Carrie Smoot Jensen says the fire started at about 3 p.m. Friday in a warehouse. She tells the Great Falls Tribune that equipment used to extract honey from hives was damaged, packaging equipment was smoke damaged, and cardboard and plastic containers were destroyed. Smoot Honey produces about 600,000 tons of honey and ships it all over the United States. Jensen says the honey is stored in 55-gallon barrels that were not damaged by the fire, and the company already had some gift boxes packed, but hopes to be able to continue packing before Christmas.
Travel plans for the holiday weekend? If so, getting out of town will be a snap. It's the getting back part that could be dicey, according to the National Weather Service. Meteorologist Corby Dickerson says the big high-pressure system that stalled over western Montana and degraded air quality in some areas will stick around for the next couple of days, but the weather will start to change on Sunday. Dickerson says inbound systems are shaping up to present a real 1-2 punch to our entire listening area.
Well, this weekend we're seeing a big weather system that's going to be dropping down out of Canada. It's going to be pulling some moisture down off the Pacific, and it's going to be bringing a huge change in temperatures as we head into next week. The first of a series of impacts that travelers are going to see this weekend are the potential that starting on Saturday we could see some pockets of freezing rain, especially in those areas that have not seen much sun and have been stuck in temperatures and nearer to below freezing. Particularly right now, it looks like northwest Montana could be under a particular issue.
Dickerson says the Missoula Valley could also see some freezing rain problems, but it all depends on how strong the inversion gets over the next couple of days. Once that freezing rain threat passes, a very cold front slips in right behind it.
It's going to bring heavy snow to the mountains and heavy snow all over the mountain passes. This looks like it's going to happen later on Sunday. when we see this heaviest snow potential. Valley snow amounts and even mountain snow amounts are still in question, but at this time it looks like it's going to be a pretty good hefty bit of snow that's going to fall over those mountain passes, enough that it'll cause the plows to be running pretty strong and could see some really slow travel as you're heading home from your Thanksgiving holiday.
And to top it all off, brace for much colder temperatures.
Certainly looks like next week we're going to see temperatures being the coldest we've seen yet this year, but perhaps even the coldest we've seen in 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, with the possibility that we could break our long-running streak of non-below zero temperatures. Right now, you know, we feel pretty confident saying lows in Missoula Valley, for example, certainly down into the single digits. Possible that things could get even colder. High temperatures next week in the teens do not seem out of the question at this time. It's just a matter of how much cold air develops over the open country of Alaska and how this weather system that's dropping down out of Alaska evolves and how much cold air it's able to pull down with it.
Meantime, the stagnant air over Missoula has resulted in slowly deteriorating air quality. Missoula City County air quality specialist Ben Schmidt says air quality has been bouncing between unhealthy for sensitive groups and moderate and should continue to do so for the next couple of days. He points out that air quality problems have improved over the years.
In the 1990s, when these inversions and high pressure ridges would hit, we'd have to call stage one air alerts within a matter of hours, typically in the wintertime, just because the pollution built up so fast because there was so much being generated. We're at the point now in Missoula where we get these high pressure ridges, strong inversions, the cold air in the valley bottoms trapping all the air pollution. We get these and the pollution builds up much slower because we've done so much as a community to reduce those particulate pollution levels. We still have pollution obviously being generated, from people's wood stove use, from all the vehicle traffic and such that we have.
Stay tuned for more on weather and air quality later in this broadcast.
Crow Indian fancy dancer Christian Parrish Takes the Gun is among 10 Native Americans scheduled to appear on a Native Pride float in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. Takes the Gun tells Billings Gazette he's been dancing at powwows since he was in fourth grade and over the past decade has been spreading his message of sobriety through his hip-hop dancing. The combination of the two dance types is what he plans to do on the float. The parade starts at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. He says it's an honor to represent the Crow people.
Some of you may have already begun thawing the turkey for tomorrow's big meal. The vast majority of Americans get their turkeys from the supermarket, birds that have been mass-produced to meet the mass demand. But on a 30-acre farm north of Great Falls, dozens of turkeys grown for consumption lead a life similar to their wild turkey kin. Jacob and Courtney Cowgill raise these heritage turkeys on their Prairie Heritage Farm outside the small town of Power. In this Thanksgiving Eve interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with Courtney Cowgill about the farm and their special turkeys. The Cowgills both grew up in central Montana and have been farming for the past 5 years.
And we started out on leased ground near Conrad, north of Great Falls. And last year, we made the big leap and purchased our own place in September. So we've been here about a year. And we do 30 acres. And it's an old-fashioned kind of farm. It's a lot like the farms that existed, 50 to 100 years ago around here, small and diversified. So we do about 3.5 acres of mixed vegetables, just about anything you can grow in Montana. And then we also do 6 to 10 acres of heritage and ancient grains, which we market locally and statewide. It's all direct market. And then we also raise the turkeys, the heritage turkeys. And this year we had 73, and we just finished bagging all of them yesterday. So we did all the processing this weekend. It went really well.
So you sold out?
We did, yeah. Yeah, we sell out every year. That's the thing about turkeys. People are really hungry for local turkeys, and they're hungry for organic turkeys, and they're hungry for these particular breeds, which are these older breeds. The heritage birds are very popular as well. So we generally sell out every year. We had fewer this year than in the past. We kind of took it a little bit easier this year on ourselves. but we can certainly do more and planning on doing many more next year as well.
At this point, we should talk about what a heritage turkey is. It's not a butterball.
It's not a butterball. Yeah. So these turkeys are, they're the kind of turkeys, they're closest to a wild turkey, basically. And there's a few things that make a heritage bird a heritage bird. According to the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, there are basically three things that make a heritage bird a heritage bird, and that's that they are naturally mating, meaning that they can do it themselves. The second thing is that they have to have a long, productive outdoor lifespan. So a lot of modern breeds they don't do well outside. They do better in confinement. They've been bred to do well in confinement. Ours like the outdoors. They can fly, which is problematic for us at times. And then the third thing is that they are slower growing. So it takes our birds about 6 months to grow out. And that gives them a little bit more time to develop their skeletal structure better. A lot of modern breeds are bred to get so big so fast that that some of them can't walk or fly because their skeletal structure doesn't have the time to keep up with their weight, basically. So ours are pretty, they're really hardy birds. They do well outside, and they're a good integration for what we're doing on the farm as far as the diversification and kind of the overall ecology of what we're doing.
And you would argue that because the birds naturally breed and because they are outdoors and not confined and feeding on things outdoors, that they produce better meat.
They do. I think so. Of course, I'm not an objective observer in this. I love those things. But they have a little bit more darker meat. They're juicier, and they are a bit closer to what you would think a wild turkey might taste like. And I think they're delicious. We had one last night. We sometimes can't wait till Thanksgiving, so I grabbed one out of the cooler last night and popped it in the roaster, and it's quite delicious.
The heritage turkeys almost went extinct, I read, by 1990, that
yes.
The mass production of turkeys had almost made these extinct. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, and that is one of the that's one of the founding principles of what we're doing out here with the farm, with the turkeys, and with our grains and with our vegetables. We grow mostly heirloom vegetables. We grow heritage and ancient grains, and then we grow these heritage turkeys. And the idea is that in order to save these valuable genetics, we have to eat this food. So it seems kind of funny, but in order to save the American turkey, we have to eat it. because the more we eat it, the more we grow it, the more farmers are growing it, this particular, these breeds, the more these genetics are going to be around. And the genetics are really important for the future of our food, whether that be through the grains or through the vegetables or through the turkeys. These older genetics might hold the key to our food supply in another 50 or 100 years. And so we're big proponents of bringing back some of these older breeds and seeds for that reason as well.
And your birds have no antibiotics. How do you keep them healthy?
It's the breed, partially, because they're a hardy breed. As far as keeping them healthy, we're firm believers in a healthy environment on the farm makes for a healthy animal. We allow them to be outside, and they're not confined. We're feeding them good food and taking good care of them, and that we've never had any health problems with our birds. So that's, I think, a testament. We've been growing these birds for, this actually, we've only been farming for 5 years, but before that, my husband Jacob was apprenticing on a farm in Big Sandy with our friend and mentor Bob Quinn, and he raised them for 2 years then. So this is actually 7 years for us with the turkeys.
You mentioned earlier that they do fly, and that sometimes gives you problems.
Yes.
They fly off,
yes.
Off the farm, I assume. What do you do?
Yes. Oh, they're tricky. Predators are tricky. So, they're pasture raised, and they would be delicious for a lot of the coyotes that we hear around here in the middle of the night. So we actually have a large barn that we herd them into every night. So they have free range of the farm, which is great for them and great for their for the flavor of their meat and great for the bugs that they're eating that, you know, might be problematic for us on the other aspects of the farm. But boy, I am so over scraping turkey poop off of my windshield or off of my porch. I'm really, Thanksgiving is always a slightly happy and slightly sad day for me, but mostly happy this year.
The end of the poop season, right?
Exactly. It's great fertilizer for the rest of the farm, but it's not doing anything for anybody on my windshield. So.
Your turkeys cost quite a bit more, Courtney, than a turkey at the local Safeway or Albertsons. They're about $6 a pound compared to about $1.30 for the other. That's an expensive turkey. It'd be about almost $100 to feed a crowd.
It is. It's an expensive turkey. And because of that, they're not necessarily for everybody. There are efficiencies in growing poultry in kind of the modern way, which is lots of confinement, lots of birds in one space. It's definitely more efficient to grow like that. But in everything that we're doing on the farm, we're looking at kind of the efficiencies of modern agriculture, which has its place in this world for sure. But trying to revive an older type of agriculture that we feel like is better for the land that we're growing it on and better for the health of the animal and ultimately better for the health of us and for the health of our bottom line. You know, if we want these kinds of farms to be around, unfortunately, they're not as efficient as modern agriculture, and that means that things cost a little bit more. But when you look at it, it's probably more of a true cost of the food. In cheap food, with cheap food, there are other costs that we don't see at the grocery aisle, costs to the environment and costs on labor and costs on other things. And
one's health, perhaps.
And one's health as well, yes.
One final question for you, Courtney. You mentioned that you'd already cooked a turkey and you roasted it. Is that how you fix it for Thanksgiving? Tell me your recipe.
Yes, yeah. Our recipe is about 20 minutes a pound. And our birds are fresh too. They've never been frozen, so they cook a little bit faster. So it's definitely a trick to get it right. Mine is just a simple rub of olive oil and garlic and salt and pepper. And I sometimes stuff a few herbs in the cavity of the bird and maybe an apple halved stuffed in there. And then I roast it for about 20 minutes per pound on it. And that gives it a nice crispy outer layer, which I like, and a nice moist bird on the inside. And we'll have our second one on Thanksgiving. We're kind of gluttons this year, so we'll have two this week, which I'm not going to complain about.
Well, it sounds delicious, and I've been speaking with Courtney Cowgill, and she is a co-owner with her husband Jacob of Prairie Heritage Farm, where they raise heritage turkeys, and they sold out this year. Courtney, thanks so much for giving us a turkey lesson, and also want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thanks, Sally, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
And now for tonight's forecast. West's divide tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 17 to 24 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with haze in the morning and highs in the mid-30s to lower 40s. In central Montana tonight, it should be partly cloudy with lows 15 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy skies with highs 40 to 50 degrees. In southwest Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies and lows 20 to 25 degrees. And tomorrow should be partly cloudy with highs 40 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Tomorrow's the start of the holiday season, a time when many of us gather with family and friends, including parents and older loved ones who live far from us. This can be a wonderful opportunity to have important conversations with them. Tonight, I want to share some tips on having these conversations while you're at home for the holidays. I'll never forget the first time it hit me that my parents were getting older. My father called to tell me my mother was going to have open-heart surgery the next morning. I freaked. I flew home on the next available plane, arriving after the surgery was completed. When I walked into the hospital room, my mother looked old and white. I thought I would faint with the realization that she was indeed aging. Before this, every time I'd visited home, my mother went out of her way to make the special foods my siblings and I loved. She pampered us during our stays. This visit, for the first time in my life, I had to go shopping to stock the house and make sure my father had support. I was already in my 40s, but the realization that my parents were aging jolted me beyond words. Fortunately, my siblings and I had many more years with my parents and the opportunity to have all the necessary conversations that I'm encouraging all of you to have. With this in mind, the National Area Agency on Aging Association, known as N4A, annually launches a Home for the Holidays campaign. Its purpose is to encourage spouses, parents, adult children, and older adults to start having those important conversations that will help each other ensure their wishes will be honored as they age. A national survey by the Conservation Project found that 9 in 10 Americans want to discuss their own and their loved ones' end-of-life care, but only 3 in 10 have actually done it. While often difficult to initiate, these conversations are valuable and necessary for all involved. By discussing end-of-life issues for yourself or your loved ones, you take the first critical step to create a plan that accurately reflects your or their wishes and prepares and engages those who you love. But how do you broach these topics? Like most important things you do in life, preparation is the key. Start by gathering your thoughts. Think about the basic aspects of the conversation, like selecting a time to talk, picking a location, deciding who should be involved, and listing the topics that are important to discuss. Figuring out the best way to start the conversation can feel challenging. Here are a few icebreakers that may help. Simply say, "I need your help with something." Or share a story about a person whose end of life didn't go well for the family. Like, "I was thinking about what happened to Aunt Emma, and it made me realize I don't want that to happen to me." Or take the approach of using yourself as an example by saying, "I just answered some questions about how I want the end of life to be. I want to share my answers with you, and I'm wondering what your answers would be." Remember to be patient, non-judgmental, and try not to control the conversation. Realize a first attempt may be the beginning of the conversation, not the end. Aside from end-of-life issues, there are many other important topics that need to be discussed. At the N4A website, www.n4a.org, you can download a simple 8-page document titled, "Let's Talk, Starting the Conversation About Health, Legal, Financial, and End-of-Life Issues." If you need resources specific to the area where your parents or an older loved one lives, simply go to this site, www.eldercare.gov, for the Elder Care Locator. This search tool can connect you with any area agency on aging in the country where staff can help you find local resources. All you need to know is the zip code or city name and state. I encourage you to begin or continue having these incredibly important conversations while a loved one is still enjoying life. Not only will it be easier, but you won't want to be wondering about these things during a crisis situation. Think of the conversation as a cherished and enduring holiday gift that you can give to each other. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services. Happy holidays, safe travels, and as always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.